Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Throughout history, there are some events that stand out as so groundbreaking that they can completely change life as we know it. The Apollo moon landing of 1961 was one of those events. The invention of the Apple personal computer was another. In his new book, Moonshot, John Sculley, former CEO of both Pepsi and Apple, claims that we are in an era that is giving birth to numerous groundbreaking events and innovations, moonshots, that will change the way we live and work for generations to come. Again, the title of the book is Moonshot, Game-Changing Strategies to Build Billion-Dollar Businesses, and it's a great pleasure to welcome John Sculley to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Joe. Pleasure to be with you.
Let us begin with the definition of moonshot, of what you mean by moonshot.
Well, moonshot is a metaphor that's well understood in Silicon Valley. It was inspired by John F. Kennedy's challenge to a nation in 1961, where he said, we are going to put a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth before the end of this decade. And in fact, we did. And that became really the metaphor that says when something is so innovative that it changes the world, that the world is different after the moonshot than it was before, then we call it a moonshot in Silicon Valley. An example would be when Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak created the first useful personal computer. The world was different after that. Or when Tim Berners-Lee created the World Wide Web. The world was different after that. Or Google created the relevancy ranking of search and enabled an entirely new way to organize information and find information. The world was never the same again. That was a moonshot. Or the iPhone, you know, changed the way we thought about mobile devices, and that was a moonshot. And so moonshots can really set the foundation for entirely new ways of thinking about different industries. And what is happening now, Joe, is that it isn't just one company introducing one really innovative product. It's that we have several incredibly rapidly growing at exponential rates of growth technologies. One is mobility, you know, smartphones everywhere. The other is big data analytics. You know, the cost of data is becoming extremely efficient, reliable, and cheap. And the cloud is making all of this possible. This is a form of computing that we couldn't have imagined even a decade ago. And the implication here is not about technology, but it's about the derivative effects of technology. And the moonshot I refer to in my book is the market power shift that is shifting power, regardless of whether you're a business-to-business or a consumer business or anywhere in the world. It's shifting power from the incumbent leaders in industries to new businesses where customers are paying more attention to the opinions of other customers than they are to the incumbents and their strong reputations. And we're seeing these transformational businesses being created in just a few years that are worth billions of dollars. And it's hard to understand how this is happening again and again unless you consider just how much power is now in the hands of customers and how customers are driving the future of business.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because you point out in the book that the time really is ripe for this new breed of innovative entrepreneur to build businesses capable of this moonshot. So what ingredients do you think need to be in place for these people to be innovative entrepreneurs?
Well, in the era that I spent my time in Silicon Valley for 10 years, it was all about engineers because they were the ones creating these technologies. Now we're in a different era. We're in an era where many companies are being built by people who aren't engineers, but who are able to think about a problem through the eyes of a customer. And in many cases, taking established industries and taking the friction out of those industries. Now, here's an example which I think almost everybody will recognize, Uber. You know, Uber went into the industry that had been dominated by taxis. I mean, what could be, less tech-based than the taxi industry? And yet they went into that industry with a better idea, which is we're going to make it really simple for you to order a car service and do it from your mobile device, and you don't have to worry about having money in your pocket or a credit card when you want to pay for it. You don't have to worry about the tipping. All that's all built into it, and we'll make it just extremely convenient, and that's called taking the friction out of the system. And, of course, Uber has gone from a startup 5 years ago to a company today that has a market value of over $40 billion. So Uber is not a technology company. Uber is a company that is using these moonshot technologies of cloud, mobility, data analytics to build a new infrastructure that is better than the one that was there before, which was the taxi industry.
When it comes to the challenges, and I guess one of the challenges being competition, but when it comes to the challenges, what are they, do you think, the chief challenges for anyone who wants this shot?
Well, I think it's actually pretty simple if you think of it from the perspective of a customer. The way to build a really valuable company today is not to focus on competition, but to focus on the customer and say, what's in it for the customer? What's a really big problem, maybe a $1 billion problem that needs to be solved in a better way? And so it's not about technology. It's about, you know, thinking about a business or a service through the eyes of a customer. And if you can then not only articulate a big problem that needs to be solved in a better way, but you can actually come up with a solution to that problem that is enabled by technology. You don't have to be a technology company in terms of inventing the technology, but you can use technology. You know, and this great example would be someone like Amazon. Amazon took a pretty traditional business, selling books, and what could be more, you know, mundane than selling books? And yet, from that, they figured out a better way to give customers an experience they couldn't get any other way, which was to say, we're learning so much about you from your online habits that based on the book that you bought last time, here are recommendations of 3 or 4 other books that we think you will probably like. And then they carry that idea way beyond books. And so now they have more products than any other retailer in the world. But they carry everything from personal care products to you know, high-cost products, and it's turned into America's way of, not just America, but it's the world's way now of buying products, and it's called e-commerce. And so it's all done by giving the customer a better experience with less friction in it. Just put it in the shopping cart online and one click to pay, and that simplification, but doing it at disruptive prices. So Amazon says, not only can we give you the widest choice of products, not only can we give you a disruptive price on those products, but now they're saying, we'll deliver that product to you on the same day. And there are even services today that say, even that's not fast enough, we'll find ways of delivering a product to you in 2 hours. And so the world is being rethought through the eyes of customers. How do you create a better customer experience? And there's company after company. Right now, the hot space for venture capital investment is called infrastructure as a service. And a perfect example of that would be the courier services that are delivering all kinds of products to people's homes, everything from food that you want to eat for dinner tonight to, you know, the types of products which retailers are selling. So that now retailers to compete with e-commerce services are hooking up strategic partnerships with these courier services that say you don't even have to come to our store anymore. Just go to our website, they'll pick a product that you like, and the courier service will deliver that product to you in a matter of hours. So everything that we took for granted in the past is being rethought through better and better customer experiences.
Let me talk a little bit about your career, because it is fascinating. You are so known for your expertise in marketing, and which goes back for the 15 plus years that you were at Pepsi Cola and PepsiCo. You not only being CEO, but really gaining great ground in that company, and perhaps best known for creating the Pepsi Challenge. what fascinates me about your story is what a CEO that has a strong marketing background can achieve, of what the benefits of that are.
Well, I think that the best CEOs are usually pretty darn good marketers, and it doesn't make any difference what industry they're in. When I was at Pepsi, the challenges were pretty clear in that we were a strong regional soft drink brand in the United States. There were some markets, a very large part of the country, where we were outsold back in the 1970s by 10 to 1 by Coca-Cola. If you went through the Southeast or you went through the Southwest parts of the United States, people didn't even know Pepsi was in business. So when we created the Pepsi Challenge, it was all about coming up with a way of how do you get people who never had any experience drinking your soft drink brand before, Pepsi, who had no motivation to try our brand. They were completely happy if they were a soft drink drinker drinking Coke. So how do we build some excitement into the idea that they might actually like Pepsi better than Coca-Cola? And so we came up with this idea of the Pepsi Challenge. And we were successful enough with the Pepsi Challenge that it ended up some years later that Pepsi actually passed Coca-Cola in the U.S. and become the largest selling consumer packaged good in America. So Pepsi was a marketing company, and it made sense that whether I was CEO or someone else was CEO, that the CEO would be someone with strong marketing experience. When I was recruited to the high-tech industry, there was nobody with marketing experience because it was all about engineers. And Steve Jobs was the first one who said, you know, I think in the future that high-tech is going to be marketed the way the colas were in the cola war. And the reason he recruited me to Apple was that he was developing at that time a product that was for non-technical people that was going to be giving them a tool that would allow them to do personal publishing, later called desktop publishing. And he wanted someone to teach him and Apple, how do you market a product like that to non-technical people, you know, the way soft drinks were being marketed to just normal consumers. And so that's why I was recruited to Apple. It wasn't because I knew anything about computers at that time.
And the quote that comes so often is that Steve Jobs said to you, do you want to sell sugared water all of your life, or do you want to change the world?
Yeah. Steve and I spent about 5 months getting to know each other. We would meet on the weekends. We were in New York City just about this time of year, end of March in 1983. And we were standing up on the terrace of a new triplex apartment at the San Remo Palace that he just acquired. And we were looking out across the Hudson River. And I said, Steve, I've thought about it a lot. I'm not coming to Apple. And he paused for the longest time. And he had his blue jeans on. In those days, he had jet black hair and very dark eyes. And he looked down at the pavement. And then he looked up at me. We were just inches apart. And he said, do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to come with me and change the world? Mm-hmm. And Steve Jobs, one of his greatest skills, remember, he was not an engineer. One of his greatest skills was he was a incredible recruiter, incredible negotiator, incredible marketer. No one could present an idea or a product as well as Steve Jobs could. And he had good intuitive sense of design. He was not trained as a designer. He actually couldn't draw. Many times, because I had studied architecture and industrial design, I would take his ideas and I would make little sketches of it. He said, well, is this what you mean, Steve? And he said, yeah, so that's sort of what I'm thinking of. And that he had this great intuitive sense of design and this master ability to be able to promote an idea. And he could convince just about anyone to, you know, believe in what he believed in so strongly, and his ability to turn an idea into a passionate goal that he would say would change the world. And in many cases, he did it over and over again.
And as you point out in Moonshot, that we're just waiting for that to happen again, that the time is right for that.
I think it's an amazing time if you're an entrepreneur. Here's something to think about. A year ago, Facebook bought a company called WhatsApp, and they paid about $20 billion for it. It had 56 employees. It was 4 years old. It had zero revenue. And a lot of people were scratching their heads and saying, well, why in the world would Facebook pay so much money for something that had no revenue and 56 employees? And the answer, it was pretty simple if you look back in hindsight. The answer was Facebook was needing a pivot from a service that was really dependent upon big screens, desktops, and notebooks. They needed a pivot to get people to start to use Facebook on mobile devices. And WhatsApp had over 450 million users. And even though they weren't paying for it, they were users. And so it's now, you know, more than a year later, and Facebook has been able to buy not only WhatsApp, but they bought Instagram and a few other smaller companies, and they have pivoted their business to smartphones, and now they get over half their revenues and profits come from those smartphone devices. And a company like WhatsApp has been pointing, it's been a pipeline of new customers to adopt the Facebook service. And they're already customers who understood mobile because that's what WhatsApp was available on. So you have to look at the opportunities to build transformational businesses in a very short period of time, often, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. And you have to look at what's the strategic value of solving a problem for a customer in a novel way, and then how do you scale that as rapidly as possible? And it all goes back to the basic message in my book, Moonshot. It's about the power shift to customers and letting customers tell the story to other customers. Customers believe the opinions of other customers far more than they believe the messages from even the strongest, most respected incumbents. And Facebook's a perfect example of how they were able to use customer opinions of WhatsApp to pivot Facebook into a mobile service.
The book is fascinating. It is entitled Moonshot, Game-Changing Strategies to Build Billion-Dollar Businesses. It is published by Rosetta Books. John Sculley, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing.
Well, thank you. Enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the title of the book is Moonshot, Game-Changing Strategies to Build Billion-Dollar Businesses. It's published by Rosetta, by John Sculley. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.